welcome to the fifth episode in the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Brenton, who is joining me today.
Hello, I'm Luke. I'm one of the buyers here at GAK for guitars.
Hello, I'm Joss, and I look after the YouTube channel.
Excellent. And how are you both doing today, gentlemen?
Fantastically well.
Yeah?
The sun is out. It is a glorious day.
Well, we're stuck in an office.
In a black painted room.
That is true.
With no windows.
We know the sun's out.
Yeah, that's true. We do.
I checked it on the internet.
We record the podcast from Joss's video room in the cavernous back building of the GAK offices, which is nice, and it is completely painted black.
It is. I don't know. Sometimes I get in and it's dark, and then I leave and it's dark.
It's like it was a room that has previously been used to store coal in the depths of a ship.
It does look like that.
The furnace of evil.
But believe it or not, this used to be our MD's office back in the back in the day, and now it's your office, Joss.
Yeah.
So essentially, you are the MD.
That was a fantastic
noise. Master of disaster.
So how have you both been this week? How's it all going?
All right, yeah.
Good.
What have you been up to? Luke Taft, what have you been playing this week?
Selecting and choosing a nice range of new PRS core and wood library stock.
Sweet. That's... Don't talk too much about that because we are going to come on to that stuff in a bit. Okay. Is there anything else that you've been at, or have PRS really been taking up your week?
That was most of last week in terms of interesting time.
Yeah.
Outside of the routine.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not completely new for us to have PRS because we have, of course, always stocked them. But there's a massive upping in our stock level for PRS.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of, they sort of died down a little. I think they just weren't doing anything as interesting. And now sort of the 30ths are out and they've kind of gone back to some of theirs more traditional, like, I say traditional, some of like the core colours and things. And now kind of PRS is having a bit of a resurgence. So it's nice.
Yeah, sweet. Excellent. What about you, Joss Allen? How have you been? How's your week been?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, not bad.
What have you been playing this week?
I done some cool guitar playthrough videos this week that are up on YouTube with some Ibanez guitars.
That's right, yeah. This weekend you hooked up with Adam Bell. Also works here, and you shot a few playthroughs. It's our first time shooting playthrough videos because, of course, we've... before always done just straight demo videos this time we had the two of you playing along to some tracks. So how did it work? One of the tracks was yours.
Both of them are originals. Yeah, my one was written, recorded and performed by me, and the other one was written, recorded and performed by Adam as well. The cool thing is, though, obviously the one thing that people need to take into consideration with it is that we aren't miming. It may look like we're miming, but we're recording directly from the DV mark. So the guitar tones you hear are actually us playing. There's the guitar tones of those guitars. So we're recording directly into Cubase, and it sounds really, really good.
The videos do look like they're sort of mimed, though.
I know what you mean.
So is that like sort of a post-production thing?
I think it might have been. It's something. It might be just the multi-camera angle thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you're changing between, like, if I kept it on just the front shot with the big camera,
it
would have been. And I think it would have looked more like we were genuinely playing along actually properly. But then when you change between like the headstock, the GoPro shot, and then the body shot as well, and when you're changing between three cameras at sort of a fast pace, it does look like, you know, it may look like we're miming
at some point. And I think so. Adam's quite a light player as well.
Adam is a very light player,
so it's sort of quite interesting just to watch because he's got such a light touch.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, you know, running with sort of digital amplification like the DV mark, with the settings that we had it on for the specific tracks, you could tap lightly. There was a lot of noise gated there, and the gain was relatively high. And
I need to get me on one of those sort of setups.
They're cool. But yeah, so that was fun. That was a lot of fun. It was the first we've ever done of something like that, and it was good fun.
Yeah, it was cool to...
655 looked nice.
Yeah, the blue one here, really, really nice.
Yeah, that did look really cool. We got to check... Did we check that one out when we went up to Ibanez as well?
Yeah. We got to check that guitar out when we went up to Birmingham. Unfortunately, not as in-depth as the video I just did, but I actually finally got to sit there and play it properly and see what it was all about, because I'm a huge fan of the RG550s, and it's, you know, it's apart from it being a Rosewood fretboard, it's very, very, very similar to those guitars.
Yeah, I think I think it was really good to do some playthrough videos, just because of the sort of style that you and also Adam Bell play in. It kind of it worked a lot more than having sort of just someone sit and play a guitar on their own. It was nice to see it in context, but it was a cool thing to try. Sweet. So, moving swiftly on to our podcast topic for this week, I wanted to talk about players' alternatives to the big two. So. I originally I was thinking of doing high-end alternatives to the big two, to Fender and Gibson, but I didn't want to exclude. I realized that an awful lot of like players' guitars can be kind of around the £500 mark as well, and still have sort of excellent premium features on there, and I didn't want to exclude those things, especially when I looked at the sort of the major brands that are offering alternatives. The reason I've called this players' alternatives was because every time we do a podcast where we're like, oh, we're going to do a podcast, we're not going to talk about Gibson and Fender, it just, we end up talking about Ibanez, we end up talking about stuff with Floyd Roses on, we end up talking about shredding guitars, and I kind of wanted to avoid that. I didn't want to talk about RGs. I wanted to but I wanted to talk about guitars out there that are great all-rounders, because I don't think necessarily that a lot of those sort of ESP and Ibanezes
I guess Ibanez aren't as much as a stylistic thing. Like, you look at an RG and it looks a bit metal. Like, even
I guess that counts as well.
Like, even the really nice, like, sort of flamey top, like J Customs and things, and sort of the premiums, still look a bit metal.
Yeah, definitely.
So it is kind of, they are into that corner, no matter how versatile they are playing wise or tonally. Like, I mean, I love the Wizard Two Necks and sort of all the, I think they've got like a really nice thin square shouldered profile just down perfectly, but regardless of that, I think they just look a bit too metal for most people.
I mean, I think everyone agreed kind of the same on the Ola England signature model.
That's a fair point.
Incredibly versatile guitar.
Yeah,
but
five-way selector switch, single coils, but then obviously you look at it and it's built
it's
for a specific
black,
thing.
You know, it's
stealth black, double cutaway, super deep cut.
Yeah.
And the headstock, just the headstock, I mean, reverse, like, huge pointy thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's aimed at such a definite market. And so, and that's what I wanted to avoid here. I wanted to talk about guitars that, because no matter how versatile that Ola England signature model is, no one's ever going to buy it who doesn't want to play metal.
Yeah, you're
on
definitely
it.
Not going to turn up to a country gig with an Ola England signature. Do you know what I mean?
And that's the thing. That's the thing about Tellys. That's the thing about Les Pauls, is you can use them across the board in all of those genres.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about alternatives to those big two.
Okay. Well,
that's the thing that's nice about the PRS stuff, because regardless of any versatility, it still also gets used for metal stuff. Like,
exactly.
One of the sixth players used to play.
Yeah.
Which brings us nicely into PRS.
Yeah.
I went for the segue.
Pow!
Bang, bang, bang. PRS used by sixth back in the day, and probably still now.
Dan Hill is probably using the PRS stuff still, isn't he? Probably.
Yeah. The fella from Periphery has got the PRS
Mark
signature.
Holcomb.
Mark Holcomb.
Yeah. Opeth
uses both signatures there.
Orianthe
as well. In fact, it last weekend was Download Festival, and it will mark a year since I went there with Total Guitar and got to talk to and interview all the...
How did you celebrate that anniversary?
I didn't realise that last weekend was Download until just mentioned it earlier today.
Yeah, we listened to one of my favourite bands. I think that was in celebration.
So we're going to wait until the 10-year anniversary and hit it really big.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm still actually wearing the Download Festival Press bracelet. Well, bracelet's not the appropriate word. What do you call these?
Bangle.
Bangle. Yes, we'll go for bangle. I'm wearing the Download Festival Press bangle still, a year on, which I think is not bad. I'll see if I'm still wearing it on the on the 10th year. But yes, I was actually really shocked at that festival at how many PRSs I saw. I know that PRS, yes, can be used to, you know, and
they're just relatively sounding guitars.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, if you want sort of, you know, something big, chunky rock with a bit more finish than maybe a lot of sort of the Les Pauls that are out there, and similarly, you want nice colours.
Well, that's the big thing about PRS, isn't it? Is the massive range of finishes.
Yeah.
PRS standard, S2 standard in that seafoam green, or is it?
Yeah.
There's a guitar player who plays in a band called Intervals, who is like a new heavier instrumental band, and he's endorsed by PRS, and he plays like custom 24s, custom 22s. He's got some really nice coloured ones and stuff. Yeah. But he's just been given a couple of standards, like the white one that we were taking photos of, and then this Pelham blue one, seafoam green one, sorry, and it's unreal. They just look so cool, those S2 standard ones.
Seafoam green is a nice colour.
Oh, it's a beautiful colour.
How many things, because you said they were returning to the core colours.
Well, yeah, just in terms of like Blue Mateo and Whale Blue and like the PRS yellow, and those sort of colours. I haven't really followed the lineage of PRS, but when I think of PRS, I think of Blue Mateo.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, that was the one colour that if I was going to buy a PRS, while ago, if I was going to buy a PRS, it was going to be in that Mateo blue finish.
Yeah, like, I mean, you think of a Strat, you think of, like, Sunburst, or maybe some of the custom colours. Les Paul, you always think of in Sunburst. Like, and we are conservative as guitarists, and we tend to go for Sunburst.
Yeah.
Most of my basses are Sunburst.
Yeah. Well, you had a red one for a while, didn't you?
I
but
did.
What colour is that now?
It is now two-tone Sunburst.
I mean, it's what we do. But PRS kind of carved a bit of a niche, I guess, like when they came out in sort of the 80s, sort of 30 years ago, and did somewhere, not only in terms of the guitar, but in terms of the colours, sort of cut down the middle between Fender and Gibson. I mean, they're between them in scale length, they're between them sort of in terms of comfort and how you sort of approach the instrument, I guess, is all I can think of in terms of sort of expressing what I mean. And then again, yeah, they're nice curly maple and nice colours.
What do you guys think of that that whole statement with PRS guitars, seeing as we're talking about colour and finishes and stuff, about them being like coffee tables or being dentists' guitars and stuff like that? What do you think about those statements?
What was that? Where was that?
Well, so, it's like a universally known thing with PRS guitars.
Oh, is it like a negative thing that people say about it?
People say it's an accountant's guitar.
Oh, I see. Because they were expensive and...
Yeah.
And just the way they look in terms of their finishing and stuff like that, because they're so high quality in terms of... We opened up some of those cases and we were like, whoa. Like, that is an impressive looking guitar.
Have you ever owned or played a PRS, Joss?
I've never owned or... I've played many, but I've never owned a PRS guitar.
Seen a PRS?
Yeah. I've now, after playing them, I want to own one, the standard model. But I'd open a case and I'd go, well, that's a bloody handsome looking guitar, but I wouldn't own one of those ones with the flame or the quilt top.
No. Like so I guess you kind of agree with those statements that those things are a little bit.
I think they're a bit OTT. On like the wood library stuff, like the pictures that we took. I mean, in terms of visual light, I'm like, whoa, that's incredible, that's amazing. But I wouldn't own
you
it
just
to
like
play
something
it.
A bit more subtle.
Yeah, I'd like a little something like the standard.
I was with you until I picked up that Tiger Eye with the solid rosewood neck.
Oh man, it's a little bit different for me with the solid rosewood neck because my Albert Lee.
Yeah.
But I think anything with the solid rosewood neck is just an absolute touch, like home run.
It felt incredible.
It does.
I'm sure it still feels incredible. whoever gets that that's lucky a nice piece of wood. Like, but yeah, I think the accountant's guitar or dentist guitar, I think, is something that gets labelled at them a lot. But once you sort of pick up a few and play them, you realise they actually just really work.
Yeah.
Like, they're set up perfectly.
Yeah.
You sort of pick them up, you play them and go, that is nice. Like, and I think it's good that they've done, like, the S2 mirrors and the Starlers and now the Vela or Vela or whatever.
That's
you
a
want
cool looking guitar.
Yeah.
Is that the one I liked, Joss? I'm not very familiar with their
You liked the Starler.
I liked the Starler.
Yeah.
I liked the one that had a Bigsby on it. It was a single cut.
Yeah, Starla.
Starla, in the McCarty verse, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool-looking guitar. The Mirror is one that me and Luke are definitely on par with.
That's,
really like that
that's
one.
M-I-R-A, is yeah. it? Mirror, yeah. right.
Then, I can very much see myself buying a Mirror in the not-too-distant future.
For people who aren't who don't know an awful lot about PRS, like myself, let's talk a little bit about the, I guess, the way that they work ascending in price and the different... Cool. types of PRS they do,
yeah.
and maybe also because we have, you know, we've brushed upon the fact that there are loads of interesting colours, but we should talk a bit more maybe about the colours that are available, because they are so massive and broad in comparison to a lot of other guitar companies.
Yeah.
How did they go? So we've just had the 30th anniversary for PRS, and they've released a range of guitars for that, for the 30th anniversary.
Across most of their ranges.
Oh, right, across all the ranges. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We've just got some really special ones, that's all.
I see. So how do they ascend then? So it starts off, we have SE at the bottom.
Well, let's sort of start in the middle.
Okay.
And sort of follow it through chronologically.
Why
how
not?
Does that sound?
Yes.
What PRS call the core line is obviously what they've sort of always done. That's the American Maryland-made stuff. And that is what most people think of when they think of PRS.
And that stuff competes with Gibson for price.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah,
is that like the Custom 24, Custom 22s?
Yeah.
Like those
originally,
and those are named after the frets, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Custom 24 is like the standard PRS.
Right.
And then they did a Custom 22, which is obviously slightly less frets, slightly fewer frets, and obviously sort of a slightly sort of wider pickup spacing. And that's kind of not so much the one people think of, but it's the same body shape. They also used to do standards, which were slightly cheaper, which were solid mahogany bodies and didn't have the maple cap. So yeah, kind of sort of standard fare, a bit cheaper. They've kind of always made those. They sort of started making single cuts and doing a few other things. But the real jump was, I'm going to say early 2000s as a guess, maybe a bit earlier. They started doing the SE series, which are Korean made. And these days, those are the ones that are about £600.
Right. So despite being Korean made, I guess they're still hitting a fair price point, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're wicked guitars. The Yamaha are Yamaha? PRS are really sort of controlling over the quality standards of them. And like, it was... I think it was Breakout Fest that Mark went to with, was it you and Mark?
Yeah, yeah, the two of us went.
Yeah, and interviewed players and just found like loads of them were playing PRS SEs.
Loads of them had SEs. Well, actually, I tell you what, loads of people at Download Festival had SEs. The guys from Opeth, their signature models
are SEs.
Are SEs, and they play them.
They
don't have some custom shop version.
No. Like, they are really well put together guitars. For a £600 instrument, I think... I'd sort of rather have a £600 guitar by PRS out of Korea than one of the sort of the cheaper American-made or possibly Mexican-made guitars.
Mm.
I think at that price point, for what they're offering, they're putting together a slightly better instrument.
I think it's one thing to remember that a lot of guitar players forget when looking at guitars to purchase guitars, that the nationality of a guitar has absolutely no impact.
So everything I just said has no reason.
It's to do with the parts and the quality control in that individual factory.
Yeah, the factory is the key. And as I say, PRS, as far as I'm aware, never moved factories. It's always been the same factory that they've used, and they've always been really stringent on what comes out of it, which shows, because, you know, the guitars are wicked.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So that's the top end, I guess.
Oh, the top end and sort of what is now the lower middle.
Right.
And then they did the S2 series, which is a slightly cheaper construction of American made.
They're still American made?
Yeah.
So a bit like Fender do the American specials, or?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Right, so just a cut back on hardware and parts and things like that, but
yeah, they're not as sort of They're not as pretty.
There's no maple caps on these. We're talking.
There are
straight.
Mahogany. The top is beveled as opposed to carved.
Right.
Because a lot of the time in making a PRS goes into making the top that nice carved shape. So if you look at them, they've basically got two sort of surfaces. And I think when you were taking photos, you were struggling to...
Because the camera was
It's actually got like a little...
So it goes like, it's flat on the top, and then there's a little arch, and then where it would be flat again.
Oh,
so
right.
you've got
I
like
see.
Two surfaces, as Luke said, and then a section joining the two surfaces together.
It's a little bit how Thunderbird bases work. I don't know if that's how it...
No, not like that. It's not like two levels. One is flat and one is angled.
Oh.
So it's like
a
bevel around the edge. So like you know, like a Strat has like a forearm contour.
Yeah.
Contour.
Yeah.
Instead of
being like...
Instead of being like that and all rounded and nice, it's kind of like a hard angle.
Right, I understand.
So the camera was picking up the top layer of the guitar and then putting the rest of the guitar out of focus.
It was really weird
because it was completely
such a
flat,
sharp angle. Yeah,
so, and a sharp drop off, the camera was going, hang on, there's nothing underneath that top part.
Right.
It was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, PRS might think about how to sort of, you know, reduce the costs in making the guitars, but they don't think about the impacts on us
photographers and stuff
exactly.
I mean they are creating a second industry.
Well,
other thing as well, where the scratch plates on the back not being actually in the body.
Yeah, like
they're just mounted onto the body. They're just screwed. You know, like
what?
You know, like scratch on
the cutouts.
Back. Yeah, you know, on the back of the guitar where you got like the toggle switch hole and the
bit
where all the wiring and stuff is. Usually, obviously, the section that covers
it is into
the body. These are just mounted on top of the body.
Oh, that's quite weird.
It just cuts down on another process in making a guitar.
And how much? I said it looks cool. I thought it looked cool.
You're into it.
How much do the S2s work out?
Start at 999,
which is
that's
cool.
Incredible. So
the
you
one
can
that
get
I want,
an American built PRS for less than £1,000.
The Mira and the Standard in at 999. When I saw that price, I was like, huzzah! I was so excited.
Basically, like the front loaded stuff with dot inlays.
Oh, which surely is the only way to go.
I'm inclined to say on something like an S2, but if you're looking for a PRS, some people just have PRS and birds.
I saw a dude with the PRS birds tattooed onto his arm.
If you're not aware, PRS do bird inlays on their fretboards.
Which many cheaper guitar manufacturers have tried to copy, and they invariably end up looking like dying pigeons.
I think the ones on the PRS SEs, when they had the birds, those are the only ones that don't look as good, because as they get further and further up and smaller on the fretboard, the last like two or three genuinely just look like puddles.
They'd sort of turn from birds to blurs.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of attention to detail that goes into
definitely
that sort of inlay.
But the new ones we saw, didn't we, the ones that are actually on like the wood library ones and then just the standard core higher end American ones, they're like pearl within pearl. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like the two layer
yeah
thing.
The two different layers of pearl, really cool.
How do colors work for PRS across the ranges?
They just have a lot of color options,
and they do most of them in all colours?
No, depending on the guitar, some are available in different finishes.
Right.
So it sort of, it varies by model.
But it's massive, isn't it? They do a few different types of sunburst. They do every sort of garish sort of purple and aqua that you can think of.
Yeah.
Horrible navy blues and things like that.
The denim one, do you remember like the PRS faded blue denim?
Yeah. Some people are into that.
I know.
Sort of thing.
I mean, after we stopped seeing PRS in the store, the American made PRS and saw the faded blue denim, I remember seeing that Les Paul, that custom shop Gibson Les Paul
selected.
in the PRS blue denim finish.
But I mean, that comes about because Steph is quite a PRS fan.
He is, isn't he? Yeah, Ibanez PRS and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's really into that. And obviously he commissioned Gibson to make that guitar.
Yeah, he did.
But I think that was it.
It's like a swoosh. Make me this.
They just have a lot of color options. It'd be impossible to sort of run through everything.
Of course. Well, I mean, maybe we should move on, because there are a few more brands that we need to talk about.
Well, we haven't gone through the whole PRS range just yet.
Oh,
we
haven't.
The S2.
What?
Yeah, the S2s are those. I mean, they go up to about sort of 1400.
Right.
If you want birds and like the rear mounted controls, because obviously like the Mira and the Starler, where they're front mounted and the standards, because it takes out the process of having to route from the back to
I
put
see.
The controls in.
Yeah.
It makes them a bit cheaper, and then the others are a bit more expensive. And then more recently than that, they've started the PRS SE Standard series.
Right.
Which are £400. No, Indonesian built.
Oh, okay. So same place that we're seeing things like the Vintage Modified Squire series come out.
Mm. at 400 quid PRS build. Again, wow. It's kind of like S2 to core. They've gone sort of standard to SE.
That's great. So what are you losing on the standards? Is it just a simpler selection of finishes?
I mean, when I was taking photos of the Santana model, they're completely stripped down.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing on this thing apart from, you know, obviously the pickups and everything like that. I mean, the finishes are just block coloured finishes.
Right.
And
but still, considering the mantra of PRS, I would expect the quality control still to be.
They stripped back on all the other bits, but left like the core of the guitar there.
Amazing. So you can now pick up a PRS for £400, which of course, admittedly, a very different PRS, but 10 years ago, you couldn't pick one up for less than $2,000.
Yeah.
No, not until they did the SE stuff.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, they're just wicked guitars.
Brilliant. Yeah, definitely something to think about. Of course, the 2015 Gibson range has been very popular, it's very stripped down on from any previous years from Gibson. So I think PRS offer a really great alternative for people looking for that sort of thing, but maybe haven't found what they want in the new Gibson range. Definitely check out the new PRS stuff.
I'm looking forward to getting a mirror.
I'm definitely going to get a standard.
I'm not going to get any of them as I play bass.
Don't fancy a nice Kestrel bass or Kingfisher?
Yeah, they do. They have the Kestrel and the Kingfisher, possibly the two worst named basses of all time, but really, really cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm waiting for them to do the Super Kestrel.
They're cool basses. They unfortunately don't do a P-style bass, so it's a Music Man style and it's a jazz style bass there too.
Yeah,
they're two models which are really cool, really versatile, and again really well built and everything. Just
I've never picked one up. I don't know, but
neither have I. I just on paper, they look wicked. Moving on to another brand. I've cited EVH as being something that I think represents a sort of player's alternative. I mean, I was thinking less, obviously, about the EVH Striped series here.
See, the Striped series is the only thing I think I know.
Mm. I mean, I was obviously thinking of the specials and the Wolfgang things.
Okay.
Is that something either of you have had experience in?
Not so much. I mean, were you thinking sort of like the old PV Wolfgang?
No, the EVH one.
Did you not know they didn't?
I always thought that was the core of the EVH guitars.
Well, it is essentially now.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And when EVH decided to, you know, do all of that sort of stuff, but it was PV to begin with.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And they're actually very similar again to kind of some Music Man models in that sort of
incredibly similar. Like, I'm talking, like, if you think of, like, say, a Music Man Access Super Sport, and then you put, like, an EVH Wolfgang next to it, they look incredibly similar in terms of size, weight, everything.
So what's your experience with the Wolfgang series?
I mean, I've seen all of their models from when I was working in the store for the past, 5 years now. So I got to see all the different ones from our £1,899 ones to our £400 ones.
Well, that's it. The special series comes in at around the sort of £400-£500 mark. And those guitars, to me, always kind of represented like the ultimate in a player's guitar.
Yeah.
Because it always looked to me like a guitar that was designed without anyone thinking about looks, even.
Yeah.
not in a bad way, but it was so built to be played.
Well, those guitars are incredibly ergonomic guitars. Like, they feel tiny because the headstock's so small and the body is a little bit smaller.
On the Wolfgangs, they do it the same as they do on the Music Mans. Is it 4 and 2?
I was gonna say, I mean, they come out of that the Music Man build where they're all like super comfortable guitars.
Exactly, they're all just meant to be played, as you said.
How would you describe the body shape of the Wolfgang? I think it's quite difficult to describe over radio because it's not like
anything else.
It has
a single cut, right?
But then, I don't know. I've suddenly realised I was drawing a mind blank earlier. Uh-huh. I am familiar with them. They're sort of like the EVH, like the Music Man, the old Music Man stuff.
But I think the closest thing to them is like an Axis Super Sport. Really.
Yeah. So it's
and very much like those PVs as well, obviously.
Yeah. So it sort of is. Yeah, I guess.
Made in a... We did have some Japanese models that were... I can't remember if they're Japanese or American now. that's just going to go flying over my head. But they were up at 18.99, and I remember the shop bought the last of the, I'm going to say Japanese because I think they were Japanese. We bought the last of the Japanese ones that were in at 18.99, and because they were the last ones, we were doing some like special offers on them, like some incredible deals, like to sell the last of the Japanese models that we had, and they were absolutely incredible. They came in like the two different colors. We had a vintage white finish with a black binding, we had a sunburst finish, and we had a black one as well. The black one and the vintage white one had like maple neck, solid maple necks, but they were like what's that maple finish, not flamed, but the other one, bird's eye maple necks, and they come in this black hard case with the crush lining, like the velvet red, blood red crush lining.
Amazing.
But the guitars were like Ibanez RGs, you know, the guitars sink into the case.
You
got the whole, so if you were to look directly at the case, it looks as if there's no guitar inside of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah, they were awesome guitars.
Yeah, the EVH stuff. Do you know the history of EVH? They're owned by Fender. Yeah. Am I right in saying?
Yeah.
That
I thought it was owned by EVH, but produced under license by Fender.
Right, because it might well be that, because I always knew there was a strange relationship there. Not sort like, of the,
because he owns the trademark or copyright or whatever for 5150 used on amps.
Yeah, because on my amp it says obviously EVH 5150 and stuff, but in the corner next to the jack it actually has a circled Fender logo on the amp.
Yeah, I've seen that Fender logo on the amp. I might be wrong. Which is why I was aware of that. Yeah. No, I think you're probably right. Yeah, there is some sort of weird licensing agreement going on between the two.
He's quite controlling over this stuff. Like even when PV were making the 5150s, he owned the rights to the name.
Right.
I think PV had the design for the amp, and then when he didn't want to do it anymore, they obviously called it the 6505.
Yeah.
Because they had the design but not the name. So yeah, I think he now owns all of that, and then they produce them under license. Like the shoes and stuff.
Yeah.
like
the shoes.
Yeah,
do you know the shoes?
I know the shoes.
We all know the shoes.
The shoes?
Solid shoes.
The shoes. The striped cons.
Oh yeah, Dave Williams in store has the Converse.
Yeah.
Van Halen shoes.
I want the full catsuit.
Let's move on to Music Man because they actually
we've sort of touched on
much,
it,
but yeah, we have touched on it, and of course, it was actually this particular model really which made me add Music Man. Whilst they do an awful lot of other things, Joss, you own an Albert Lee.
I do.
Music Man, and now the reason I've put these guys in, I guess, is because Music Man represent one of the Leo Fender companies, they're an obvious alternative to the big two.
Yeah,
And the kind of models they released were incredibly versatile.
Yeah, they are. They're just like refinements.
Yeah, exactly. That's
to the original Fender mold.
That's of course that's what everything sort of felt like after the all sort of. Yeah. Two or three of the companies that he was involved in after Fender were sort of slightly refined versions of the original Fender model. So Music Man wise, what sort of things, what models do we do that sort of hit this sort of popularity, this sort of players alternative?
Luke knows, I know all the models and their specs, but I mean, you're probably best to talk about the actual stocks.
We don't really keep any stock of the electric stuff.
No, but you can custom order from Music Man.
Because we've got so much other stuff.
And they are quite a custom order style brand. Yeah. There are so many options available in the price
list. But I mean, you could say that about PRS as well.
Oh, that's true, I suppose.
Yeah, but then, I mean, it's a bit different because they sort of have core models for PRS, whereas the Music Man price list isn't so much a price list as it is a kind of like a chart of options.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
You sort of go through it. And there's options and numbers, and then you at the end you put the numbers together and make a series, like a sort of a product code.
Mm.
So like everything is a custom order, and it genuinely just is that we've got so much Gibson and so much Fender, and now so much PRS on the wall. There isn't really the room to fit it in.
Mm.
But that's not to say that you can't still order things. You can order anything from Music Man.
Yeah, I think it's sort of almost a shame that we haven't got the room to fit it in, because I think they make like that Albert Lee I nearly bought was out of this world.
I mean, like, they're the best playing guitars I've ever felt.
The Albert Lee you went for was a solid rosewood neck, and it was black, was
black
it not?
Black double humbucker fixed bridge. Black double humbucker, like with the normal trem, but I'd have locked it down.
Yeah, and Joss, you actually own something incredibly similar to that, don't you?
Exactly the same.
But yours is...
Coral red.
Which is Fiesta red.
Too. Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
Coral red.
It's got a little bit more orange in it.
Right.
Yeah, they're just great guitars. I mean, I wasn't that sold on the look of it.
Really?
Dude, that's why I got it. It looked like something out of the Jetsons cartoon.
Yeah, that's what's so cool about them. They're such a weird, like, those sort of Italian, like, 60s.
No, you said it's Italian. I love it. I think it's the...
But it is that sort of, it looks like those sort of weird body shapes that were coming out of the 60s.
Like eco and places.
Yeah, but you can get those now, all those guitars, and they're all virtually unplayable because they were so badly made at the time. They just looked amazing. So it's a great way to own something that Texaco has the look guitars. Of that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're sort of a little bit long. But then I guess the S2 Starler and S2 Mirror and the S2 Vela are like a little bit like those sort of cheap now pawn shop guitars.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I like them.
Yeah.
They're sort of along those lines, but like totally actually playable and workable and don't fall apart.
Yeah.
Which is always good.
So the Albert Lee was the thing that you guys were both looking at. What else do they offer in terms of model names? Do you know what the name is of the model that is the same as the Wolfgang series of EVH?
The Axis.
That's the Axis Super Sport. Yeah, or the Axis. Yeah.
That's what they became after EVH sort of moved over to PV.
Right.
Before moving over to his own thing.
Oh, is that how it worked? Did Music Man have it first then, and then PV, well, and now EVH?
He designed it with EVH in the late 80s. And then I think there was some disagreement because he designed it, with Music Man. I think there was some disagreement where Music Man couldn't produce as many guitars as he wanted them to sell, in that he was getting sort of complaints from people wanting to buy them and there weren't enough out there. Because, I mean, Music Man is quite a small operation in terms of the amount of guitars they put out.
Yeah.
So he moved over to a bigger manufacturer and then just eventually wanted to do his own thing. So kind of through the lineage, the guitars are quite similar in... how they're put together.
See, I thought they were just it was just a copycat, but I understand now. Strange that I think he took the headstock.
You say copycat, I say quite similar. I think it's probably one of those things where he has the license for the headstock.
But the headstock's Music Man's headstock. It's on all their other models.
It is slightly different. If you notice, when it moved over to PV, it had like the front carved, and now it's moved over to a Fender production, it's cut out.
It's got this weird little double horn thing.
But that was originally like a sort of bevel type bit.
I see.
So yeah, it is the original Music Man sort of 4-2 headstock.
Yeah.
Which is just like wicked because it's so practical to use.
Yeah, so small.
Everything Music Man make is like compact and dinky.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you sort of sit with it, and it's like, this is a guitar that I could sit with for hours on my sofa.
What scale length does the Albert Lee come in, standardly, or do Music Man?
Standard 25.5.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's the thing, because you stand up with it, and when I play, I mean, I play my guitars relatively high up when I'm playing my Albert Lee and stuff like that, and when you draw your hand all the way down towards the headstock, it feels as if you're gonna be there in no time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you put your hand down there and you're like, there should be more neck here. Like, it feels like there should be more neck. And then when you go all the way to the top, because the Albert Lee's got quite a cutout in the body, it looks like you're gonna stop and hit the body, but you can keep going. Right. So the neck is within the body by about that much. So then you come down to the headstock and you're like, Jesus, there's like, there's all the space and all the playability, but to sort of your vision is like there's like nothing there.
Pickup options as well are quite versatile on any of this.
Well, it's got a 5-way selector switch on my Albert Lee.
A 5-way on your double humbucker Albert Lee.
Yes.
So what are the options?
Is it like the Ibanez 5-way?
I think so. Yeah. So it does like bridge, and then the next selection is like outside coil of the bridge and inside coil of the neck. And then the middle position is both outside coils.
Right,
and stuff like that.
So cool. Ah, okay. I thought it was like bridge humbucker, then a couple of the coils, and then both humbuckers, and then the neck pickup wired in parallel.
I think you're probably, I mean, you'll definitely know more than me in terms of that side of things. So,
and then regular neck humbucker.
Yeah. So it's got all the versatility of like the coil tapping sounds.
That's amazing. I didn't know that, because you can also get it in a Strat pickup configuration, you can, which is the configuration that Albert Lee plays in predominantly. But that's how they work kind of across the board on their guitars. So with Music Man,
yeah,
I mean, if you think of the Albert Lee as their Strat and the Access as their Tele, which is not quite true, but if you thought of them like that, you could still have any pickup selection on either guitar.
But they've got such a cool range of guitars. They've just released the Majesty, which is John Petrucci's new model, which is an absolute monster of a looking guitar. Just I played one and it just plays like nothing I've ever played before.
What sort of thing?
It's impossible to explain what it looks like.
Either you get it or you'll never get
it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to see a picture of the Majesty to understand what it looks like. It's impossible to explain.
Yeah, so I'm not that sold on them.
I absolutely... I mean, I've played one, though, so it's kind of different from looking at it. I looked at it and I was like, oh, okay, cool, yeah, it looks kind of different and rad and stuff. And I sat down with it and I was like, yeah, this is cool. And then they brought out the Armada, which is like their Les Paul.
How did that sound through the headphones?
Yeah, I'd like to point out, because I'm not going to cut that. but
Luke
pass
wind.
That did sound like you were passing wind, but it was Luke moving his microphone on the leather sofa that he has wedged the microphone in between.
I like to recline.
That is true. Sorry, Joss, where were you?
Armada, Les Paul, Music Man.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I guess, like their Les Paul.
It is. It's a maple top mahogany body.
Yeah.
And it's dual humbucking. It's a Les Paul by Music Man, but you can get it in pretty finishes and stuff. That's what I was going to say. So PRSs are known as, like, sometimes, as I explained, like the dentist guitars and stuff like that.
Yeah, like the pretty guitars.
Yeah, exactly. You get a Ball Family Reserve Music Man, and it is over the top, but everyone will open the case regardless and go, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I want to own and play that guitar.
I just
don't get it. I mean, some of the Ball Family Reserves I've gone like, because it's so over the top, you're just like
the Gold Roller.
Yeah.
Music Man, of course, also responsible for the
Steve Morse and the Luke.
Yes, yeah, the I was actually going to go for the... didn't you own a Luke, actually?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
I was...
sold that pretty sharp.
I was thinking of the Spinal Tap guitar.
Oh, the Nigel Tufnell.
They bought that to the Albert Lee gig we done in the store, didn't they?
It was probably quite a long time ago now. Probably like 6, 7, 8 months maybe ago now. We had Albert Lee in the guitar shop.
And Albert Lee.
He came in to sort of talk about his guitar and all of that stuff. And Music Man brought with them a selection of all their cool bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Including...
Spinal Tap guitar.
Is it the only one or one of the...
I don't know. They'll have made a few.
It's so much money.
They said that one that they brought along was the one.
Right, okay, maybe there is only one then.
And that's why it wasn't for sale and they just brought it along as a show-off thing, because the distribution centre is literally down the road, essentially, isn't it? It's in Shoreham.
It is, yeah. Just
I've gone
the
there about
us.
4 or 5 times to play guitars. And
Albert Lee's son actually works there
as
well. So.
Yeah. He does.
Which is great for us. So, you know, it's the reason we were able to get people like Albert Lee in. But yeah, that guitar's amazing. It's something like 4 humbuckers.
Four humbuckers with a speed
gear knob,
speedo, a gear knob, an exhaust pipe.
The speedo works as well when you play. I really like the stick shift whammy bar.
Yeah.
And the pickup selector, which is traffic lights. And
it's ridiculous.
I especially like that each fret, its inlay is the name of the chord that you can play on that fret in a sort of standard bar chord shape.
I thought the old Jason Becker thing was cool, where you had like fret numbers.
Yeah.
Actual numbers inlaid.
Nice. Great idea. So let's move on from Music Man and just talk briefly about ESP as well. Who I wasn't sure whether to include in this, because everyone else we've spoken about really is a straight alternative to Gibson or Fender.
Whereas ESP are a bit more metal.
They are a bit more metal.
Yeah.
But I I do think they do some really interesting, really versatile eclipses, which don't quite fit into the metal thing.
They are, I'd say, still slightly on the metal side of things, but they are just like a really good Japanese-built Les Paul.
Yeah. Exactly, which exactly. And I think as soon as you're not looking at the big two, so much of what we'd be looking at is like Japanese-built stuff. And yes. I just think the quality that I see from ESP's eclipses, especially, has been incredible. They also do their own version. They do a T-style guitar and an S-style. But I think that's more towards the lower range, am I right?
The only T-style model they do within the E2 series is the 7-string, isn't it?
In terms of E2 stuff, I think. But they do cheaper sort of T-styles. Yeah.
Because they've changed around the way their ranges work as well.
Yeah. The amount of confusion I used to get from customers was amazing when they'd done that whole change around with the E2 and then the ESP Elite series, and then that got ditched, and everyone was like, what's I buy?
they changed things around a couple of times in very quick succession.
That was what was confusing.
As it stands now, it's quite simple. We have LTD offering the entry-level guitars.
Yeah.
ESP, which is Japanese custom shop.
Yeah.
And E2, which formerly was ESP Standard Series.
It's essentially only one thing has been renamed. I mean, they released lots of new models with this aligning, but only one sort of the mid-range stuff has been renamed.
It's not mid-range, because I mean, it's sort of...
It's like what the ESP Standard Series was, so you're looking at like 15 to 18.
Yeah, I guess so.
So they're wiki guitars, they just decided that ESP needs to be more... needs to have a bit more prestige to the name, so they've kind of moved that up to custom shop, so they're like $3,000 plus. And then E2 is the bulk of everything in the middle, and LTD is anything that isn't made in Japan.
I find with most guitar manufacturers you get a lot of consistency from guitar manufacturer to bass manufacturer if they do both, but with ESP there is surprisingly little. For example, as far as guitars are concerned, certainly we would consider them massively a metal brand, and things like their Telecaster model and Strat model only exist at an entry level. Whereas on the bass side of things, whilst they do a huge range of very metal style models, all with active humbuckers, the high end that they do is the Vintage 4 series of stuff, which are P-basses, are Japanese-built precision basses. Relict P-basses, they're around the £1,500 mark, which is competing with Fender's...
American Standards?
Well, a bit more than that, American Deluxe. So it's... Because they're relict and because they're passive, unlike the deluxe series, they're actually more an alternative to a custom shop. And you are talking about a really high end sort of build quality Japanese instrument, and they really are an alternative.
Yeah.
I think the sort of thing that probably moves a little slower than a lot of their other ranges, because I think necessarily when people want to spend that sort of amount of money and they want a traditional kind of precision-based style guitar, you would obviously look at Fender first. ESP offers such a different kind of type of person that would buy an ESP that it wouldn't necessarily even be a brand that you'd look at. No. But they are brilliant, the Vintage 4 series.
Yeah, they're cool guitars. The way they do their relicking is a bit different, in that they sort of rub it back and then finish it over.
Exactly.
So it is more the cosmetic side of relicking. So they look relict, but you don't have...
They won't age like a relic will. That is important to point out. It is very different. Really strange they don't offer an alternative to it as well. That was weird. It was like they don't do a normal one as well. It is just you can only get them relic in that one way as well.
Yeah, I guess it is a bit weird, but that sort of, I think previously they have done non-relic versions, and I guess just the relic versions sell better.
Yeah, that you can get a non-relict version in LTD. You can buy the basic one, non-relict. Yeah. But if you want the really nice Japanese one, It's Relict. Yeah. Yeah, they're brilliant. I mean, kind of, I realised after putting ESP in that the predominantly, yeah, I guess they aren't really metal-focused for guitarists. It's more for bass players that they actually offer a really great player's alternative.
I
also did just buy a ESP LTD fretless P bass.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I was not aware of this.
No, yeah.
What did you go with?
They only do one fretless bass.
So tell me about that one.
Well, it is exactly that. It's a vintage 204 fretless. I went for that over getting a Squire vintage modified fretless P bass, which they do compete with on price. They're, you know, under the £300 mark. I just wanted a fretless for some recordings coming up. The reason I went for the ESP with the LTD was because, A, being them, I found for the same price the build quality to be substantially better on the LTD. Yeah, and just the feel of it, the construction of the neck was loads better. It's not aligned fretless as well. Yeah. The LTD version, which I always thought looked a little bit cooler. Slightly harder to play, but
way harder to play.
If ESP hadn't put a dot fret marker on every fret. So, okay. Which is enough. Great. Unfortunately, I did find that when I was playing it, when you've got a dot on every single fret, it's impossible to see where your 3rd, 5th, 7th, 9th and 12th fret are. So I'm definitely going to have to put stickers on those frets, but
put stickers on the fretboard and then write what the notes are.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, they're really good. Anyway, let's we'll move on from our subject today. I mean, we definitely talked about PRS more than anything else, but I think at the moment, certainly for us, PRS are just really killing it and offering a massive amount of guitars and really interesting alternatives.
If I had the money, I'd really have that Wood Library Tiger Eye.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just That's need them nice to start guitar. Doing lots of basses. Let's move on to some questions for this week. The questions this week come from our podcast Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. All of the questions this week are from Rob. Different Robs. I just picked people called Rob. There is another one.
Are you sure they're different Robs?
Yes, they are. Definitely. Well, at least two of them are different. There's maybe one that is the same. There's also a Josh on here, but for the sake of having a load of questions all from Rob, I'm going to change Josh's name to Rob. Okay, so Rob 1 says, honoured members of the GAK Commissariat. That's what I said. I require really a pedal board. I think I want to go with Pedal Train, but if they're currently unavailable, Gator would seem a good-ish bet. I have one pedal on an expression pedal, a wah, and I'd like to put in a second expression pedal. I'm getting good at reading out questions at the moment. Expansion would also be nice. I have a little list of things that would be nice to own. So far I have a boost, two fuzzes, a wah, an octave multiplexer, a ring modulator, a delay and a phaser. As I say, expansion appeals. Which pedal train do I go for?
Well, there's a whole new range of pedal train now that are due at the end of the month, and I'm not that sure about the sizes.
I heard that, and to be honest, I probably heard from you, as you're the guy who orders them, that Hello. It was all the same, but they were changing the way the slats worked, because, of course, you can't fit micro pedals on the pedal. It was definitely something they needed to change.
But some of them, they've sort of kept. Some of the bigger selling stuff, they've now just put Classic in the title.
Oh, I see.
And they've changed the design slightly so that the front of it is open, whereas before they just used to have two ports.
Yeah, that's right.
So you've kind of got the open front, so you can trail cables through.
Right, Where did they put the advertising then? Because it's on that sort of section off bit. It said pedal train.
Where'd you put the advertising for all your sponsors?
Yeah.
Valvoline. They still say pedal train on them. Right. They've changed some of them. Like before they did like 3 and 5 slats, and they now do some with 4 slats, I think.
Right, I see.
Or the other way around. So you can fit the mini boards on. And they've changed the sizes on some so they fit better into overhead luggage compartments on flights.
Oh, they are so considerate. I almost forgive them for taking 6 months to...
Yeah, it's been a long time
for them not to have stock. I mean, what alternatives are there? I guess Diego is the obvious company that we'd consider. Yeah.
Diego make great boards if you want like a wooden, chunky, hard board.
They're cool. They're a little bit more traditional looking. What sort of sizes do they do?
A few.
A few? They do, yeah.
Yeah, do the Showman, the Tourman, the Gigman, and they do the small commuter. The commuter's
which is
really
the only one that comes in a bag, isn't it?
Yeah. Soft case. And I guess the difference with them is they're flat and there's actually nowhere to trail your cables, so all your cables go on top.
Yeah, all your cables go on top and they're like a lift-off lid as opposed to like the frame lift-out bag.
Yeah, I see.
I think the other thing to say is the pedal trains will be back in stock at the end of the month.
Right.
So it's good to go. If you need something in a rush, I think you'd probably be... I think a Tourman would fit. Maybe like a PT2, like the classic.
Yeah.
Are they also called PTs? The same.
Some of them are. It's a PT2 classic, whereas the others are like Novo and Metro.
Right, I see.
And then they've got numbers in, and I forget which ones are which size.
Right.
But yeah, I think a PT2 might do it.
I think a PT2, certainly in the old size format, was kind of your most quintessential for someone who's looking to expand a pedal board, especially if you've got a wire, a couple of fuzzes.
A
ring mod and octaver, and you're looking to maybe add two or three more things to that, I think a PT2 is quite a safe bet. I mean, I use a Pedal Train Junior for all my stuff, and I squeeze 7 pedals onto that, including a couple of relatively big ones like the Electro Harmonix bass microsynth, but I am on extremely full capacity on that board. And if you've got sort of long things like wires that are going to take up the length of one side, definitely something like a PT2 would be a good bet.
That's what I use.
Cool.
Rob says, I had a weird dream last night. Why have I put this question? This is weird.
Luke's dream was the best.
I had a weird dream last night that people were stringing their guitars with a set of 20s to down-tune the most. Got me thinking, there's so many different options now, hybrid sets, coated strings, etc. I've also heard there's only a few manufacturers that make all the strings on the market. That could be an urban myth. Anyway, do you guys prefer the same gauges for each guitar, or 10s on a Strat, 9s on a Les Paul, etc.? Have you found or noticed a difference in changing brand? Joss Allen.
Les Pauls, I played 10s. It completely depends on what tuning I'm in. As for standard tuning, Les Pauls, I play 11s, sorry. And Strats, I usually put 10s on them.
Les Pauls actually come strong with 9s from the factory.
From the factory, right?
Yeah. I was really surprised to hear that as well. I only know that from we had a Gibson night in the store about a year ago. And
Nick,
yes, I couldn't remember his name there for a second. You preempted that for me. Nick. Yeah, Nick mentioned that they come out of the factory with 9s.
That's interesting. Yes. I mean, I put 10s on my Strats, 10s on my Teles, 11s on guitars that I use predominantly in sort of down tunings.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about, because I wasn't sure if it was multi-tuning.
I mean, I think tuning is the issue more than what's a guitar. I mean, coming to the second part of the question, though, as well, if you've ever noticed a difference in changing brands. I mean, I know that I certainly have.
Totally.
Yeah,
I mean,
big time.
It comes down to something that I think we sort of mentioned in the one of the other podcasts, where it's all got to do with sort of the ratio of the wind to the core. Whereas the thicker the core, the harder the string's going to feel to bend. Yeah. The thinner the core, the slinkier it is, but then you've got slightly less mass.
And that, of course, varies from brand to brand. It's not as simple as just a wound piece of metal. They are definitely very far from all being the same. What brands do you use out of interest?
I tend to use Daddario 10s.
Right, just their standard, not their...
not balance tension or anything. Just the regular ones. Although I did like balance tension for standard tuning.
Right.
I thought that was quite an interesting thing. It didn't make a massive difference, but it did make a little bit of difference. And I sort of mostly noticed it in my right hand as opposed to my left.
Really?
In terms of sort of picking tension.
Yeah.
Just standard 10s. I've tried loads of things. Like, it's interesting, he says about changing between brands. A while back, to try and hone down on which set of strings I wanted to use, I sort of did a bulk order of like every set of 10s I could find, And went for some Dean Markleys, like the Nuno Bettencourt signature strings, obviously.
Of course.
Some GHS stuff. I tried some Boomers. I can't remember what else was in it now. And it was sort of... Eventually, I sort of got a little bit as like string blindness, where I sort of just trying so many strings, you sort of forget however many you've tried. So you sort of forget all the subtle differences. So I think if you're going to try a few things, I'd say use what you're normally using and then try something else and then maybe go back to it and see how you feel about things. There were a set of... there were some signatures, and I think they were made by Dean Markley, where they deliberately marketed them as like a thinner core.
Right.
And they were quite interesting, but I sort of didn't really get on with the tension in my picking hand.
That would
hand.
Cause a lack of tension, I think.
Yeah. They were just a bit too soft.
Right, I see.
So that was interesting. And beyond that, I've settled down on D'Addario. It's just, they last for ages. I like them when they go on. I've always really liked the rotosound thing of shipping you with or sending the strings out with a second top E string.
Just, oh, really? Is that how they do for guitars? That's nice. They take into consideration that most guitarists can't restring a guitar. That's nice. I like that.
You've just got a spare there, which is quite nice.
That's quite nice.
For years and years, I used Ernie Ball, like most players, and then changed over to D'Addario back in the day because D'Addario were the first that changed over to like using a properly sealed packet. And it just meant the strings were a bit fresher when you put them on.
Yeah.
But now everyone's moved over to sort of foil sealed stuff.
Except for Rotosound.
No, Rotosound are foil sealed now too.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't bought them for a long time.
The actual packet is foil sealed.
Yeah.
I see. What about you, Jess? What string do you, use?
I mean, Ernie Ball. But that's literally just because I've used them since day one.
Which gauge?
My band plays in drop C, so I use 11s, the purple packet.
Which, what's that? Power?
Power slinkies, yeah. And then if I'm playing in standard, I'll just put 10s on whatever, the green packet, regular slinkies. But I only use Ernie Ball because I've never, ever...
It's not something that you've ever really messed around with.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've tried the balanced tension ones. They were pretty cool. And I've tried the... are they the NY XLs?
Yeah, how were they? I'm actually quite intrigued by those.
They were loud. They were pretty loud.
Who makes those, sorry? NY?
D'Addario.
Oh, D'Addario. Yeah. See, neither of you have talked about Elixir
Cobalt.
At all.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a bad thing with Elixir. I remember my uncle, for one of my birthday presents years and years ago, bought me like 4 packs of Elixir strings. And then I remember stringing my guitar up and them just breaking on me all the time. So I just never, ever bought a packet ever again.
I guess they've got to engineer something into the string so you replace it.
Yeah.
Elixir, of course, the guys who introduced coating on strings, really, to try and make strings last a little bit longer.
I really like the Elixir stuff, but I only play them on my acoustic, which
I play really
sporadically.
Yeah, so do I.
And it's mostly just because they last forever.
Yeah.
Like, you put them on and they're good to go.
But if you're playing a lot of electric guitar, that whole coating thing where my strings look like they're starting to shed, I'm just not into that at all.
But then I normally only really play acoustic with fingers.
Sure, exactly. So exactly, yeah.
So you don't have the problem with the coating shedding off. Yeah. As soon as they introduced the NanoWeb, it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, the original PolyWeb sounded like aggressively bright for a few days when you put them on.
Right.
And I'm sure they still do. But then they sort of settle down and they feel like a set of broken in. Well, they settle down to like a new set of strings is, but they stay there for weeks and weeks
I see.
As opposed to having that for a couple of days and then deadening down.
Right, yeah, of course.
So yeah, they last forever. I just break strings regularly enough on my electrics that it doesn't make it so worthwhile.
I use D'Addario as well. I use D'Addario Chromes, which are their flat wound set. Flat wounds of course last forever. You don't ever really need to change flat wounds.
I say breaking a bass string is like breaking a snare skin, isn't it? You just don't do it.
Yeah. No, I used to saw through them pretty much.
Really?
Yeah.
He literally used to saw through them.
Yeah, I mean, that was a problem.
He hated bass players.
Because back in the day it was cheaper because no one sold individual bass strings online. I mean, I'm talking sort of maybe 2002, 2003.
Right.
I was playing in a sort of thrash band playing bass. And I'd pick quite aggressively with my right hand and quite close to the bridge. And I'd go 2 or 3 gigs and I'd break an E or an A. Genuinely, you're looking at me like I'm an alien.
That's ridiculous. That's yeah. Break crazy. A low E or an A.
I used to play with a 1 mil pick and like really dig in. And a lot of it was like really fast pedal.
Were you, but you must have been like down tuned and stuff.
No, no, no. Straight E standard.
Thrash metal, dude. It's yeah, like in yeah. standard tuning.
How is it?
Yeah.
It's proper. I mean, this was like quick. And yeah, just used to break E and A strings all the time. I had so many spare D and Gs. I had a case full of D's and G's just because at the time you could buy like Rotor Sound, like the cheap stainless for
just
like £9
up
a set.
That high.
Yeah, it was all like, and yeah, just knackered strings.
That is ridiculous.
It was totally stupid.
I've never broken a string.
My band used to get so pissed off with me for breaking strings mid set.
Amazing.
I was the only bassist that had to turn up to gigs with a spare bass. It was a nightmare. But so yeah, anyway, coated strings, and we haven't mentioned Cobalt yet either.
No, I guess not. No, Cobalt are the other cool things to try out. It's not something that really exists for bass, so actually
Only Ball make them.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I just didn't know about them. I have no experience with what the deal is.
Ernie Ball hired a metallurgist, and he's played around with a few different types of magnetic metals and found that Cobalt works quite well in that it creates
really loud
a bigger impact in the magnetic flux of the pickup, so you get more current coming out,
so they're louder strings.
Induce a bigger voltage swing in
louder.
The pickup.
I see. Excellent. And that's the only advantage of them. Tension wise, they're the same.
I imagine so.
When I tried them, they felt a little softer to the touch, the actual texture of the metal.
So I tried a set, but I only had them on my guitar for a few hours.
Right.
So
you only had them for a few hours.
Yeah, I sort
Did
of put
you
break
them on two strings.
No, I put them on to have a mess around, and I didn't get on with them that well. But then I was only really plugging them into my interface, and I just wanted to see if they were louder. So I sort of plugged them in. I set my levels. When I'm playing at home, I play everything through my computer, through Guitar Rig. So I set my levels so they were just on the edge of clipping, put the strings on, played a bit, could see it was distorting, played around a while longer, and then replaced them with my normal.
That sounds like a fun evening with Luke.
Then I made
restringing takes like 2 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like...
Geez, not for me. I'm just like, I'm so like depressed when I'm doing it. I'm like, oh, because it takes me so long.
Oh, mate, you need to get quicker.
I've got a string winder and a couple of cutters as well.
Yeah.
I just don't like doing it. I can't wait till I'm famous.
Those Planet Waves Pro Winders.
Incredible.
Like the old ones when they still had rubber in the handle, so they were actually comfortable.
Don't work on bass machine heads.
No.
You know, on the Pro Winders.
I think that shows how much we care, John.
Yeah, you don't need to. You don't need him for bass anyway. Okay, well, then we have a couple more questions, but we are so wildly over time this week that I am going to save those for next week's
We're
podcast.
Saving a lot of questions. This is good.
Did we save questions last week as well?
Maybe we didn't.
Oh, I certainly didn't take any note of them. I hope I didn't promise to read them out on the next week. Maybe I did. Anyway, we'll come back to the rest of Rob's questions, and Josh, who I've now renamed Rob, will answer his question as well next week on the podcast. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This will be up. This is up now on Tuesday. I'm going to try and get this edited and uploaded today. So this is, in fact, virtually as close as you get to live as, you know, us actually doing it live. So there. So brilliant. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. I had a weird dream a while back that I was playing guitar for Steve Vai.
Right. How did it go?
I broke a string and then had to go back and get another guitar, and the tech gave me a guitar that was totally out of tune. So I went back to finishing up the set, but then obviously had to give him the guitar back because he needed to tune it, and it took him forever to tune it.